Welcome to Iteration, a weekly podcast about programming, development, and design. I'm John. I run a design and development firm that builds apps and websites, and I'm joined by JP. Hey, JP.
Hey, so I'm a software engineer at a tech real estate startup that is not Redfin nor Zillow, and today we're going to be talking about some good stuff. John, how's it going, man?
It's going really good. This week, I feel like last week I was in New York all week doing client work, doing a bunch of like new feature exploration, which is like the most fun part of the job, which is, you know, whatever you want to build, what do we want to build? Let's figure it out. And those initial user interviews and kind of capturing user stories. So I had a really fun week last week in New York doing that. But it's a bit crazy getting back into code this week and getting like starting to actually build that into a roadmap and start to cut scope. That's where the hard work starts. But it's been a lot of fun. What about you? What's your last week look like?
That's cool. Yeah. So while you were in New York, I was up in San Francisco. We're both LA based, by the way. So for those of you that are like, oh, what does that even mean to like to travel such a distance? Yeah. So I was in San Francisco. I've talked about this at length in other episodes, but we have this like biannual hack week. So,
oh, that was this week?
Yeah, so that was last week. So my coworker and I went to San Francisco and we got to hang out in the new SF office, which is cool. We recently moved offices. So now we have like six or seven floors in a new building, which is really cool. But yeah, so I just got back from Hack Week not too long ago, and I got to say it's kind of nice to be back at home, sleeping in my own bed, you know, back in the same old routine of the structure of sprints and not just sort of this not every man for himself, but like this lack of structure Hack Week that we have. But overall, really fun. My coworker and I worked on like enabling push notifications for certain markets, and I got to tell you, testing push notifications across different devices and also like testing if a push notification works when the app is backgrounded, foregrounded, and the app is killed. Ugh. I got to tell you, there is a lot of QA that needs to happen that I just don't think you could like get done by writing tests. So that was fun. But yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah, maybe that's a future episode, push notifications in general, because I've never gotten it right in a production app. I feel like there's always like, well, if you do XYZ, they may or may not fire. And it's a really tough thing because it deals with the OS level, which is a very different thing. And yeah, you can test whether or not you're requesting the notification to send, but whether or not users are getting that and all the different edge cases around that. Ugh, it can be such a pain in the ass. That's really interesting. That sounds like fun. It's funny that we both spent kind of last week very much in bubbles. You know, I was in Brooklyn in New York and you're in San Francisco. I mean, LA is its own bubble, but it's weird to see the cultural differences in how people work and what they work on. It's so interesting. Anyway, this week, enough catch up. This week we are digging into, I'm super excited to get into this, the best and the worst of apps and platforms. So this is design and development patterns that we absolutely love and we absolutely hate. So we're going to walk through a different popular apps and kind of talk through things that we love and hate overall. We've got this shit list and hit list here to kind of beef or bust and go through this stuff here. So let's kick this thing off. What's one of your first big gripes, JP?
Okay, yeah, it's funny because this list is supposed to be like both gripes and things we really love. And throughout the week, I was just like, oh, here's another gripe. Oh, and here's another one too. Oh, also, I really effing hate this one. So hopefully we can sprinkle some optimism here and there. So please stop me if I'm just bitching for
an hour. No, they're just gripes. I was like, it's supposed to be a hit list and shit list, but it's just a shit list. But I think there's a lot to learn there, like finding these patterns that are just these dark patterns or shitty design things. I think it's really good to dig into these. All right, yeah. So what's our first gripe?
Okay, so my first gripe is page reloads. So let me preface this by saying that I am on the unending hunt for the perfect to-do app. My number one requirement is that it needs to sync well between my desktop and my phone. So it's got to have that Apple-esque ecosystem just wired in and perfect and, yep, and like really good. Somehow I've landed on this app Notion, which you and I both use, which is cool because you can have like a to-do list. You could have like Kanban boards. You could have like, I think you can even have like just regular blank pages, like a regular, yeah, notepad. You could have a variety of things. But I tend to structure my life around Kanban boards now and not actual to-do lists where I check things off. For whatever reason, I've decided I'm going to invest in this idea of like dragging a card from one swim lane into the next and then having, sure, a swim lane for like a backlog. So on the desktop app, it's fine. It works really well, you know, but on the mobile app, when I drag one card from one swim lane to the next. If I'm on my phone and I'm doing this, it will reload the entire page. So, and I know it reloads the entire page because as soon as I move like a card from in progress to complete, the screen goes white. And then I have to like wait for a split second. And not only that, it will like reset my position on the page. So if you imagine a Kanban board on a mobile app, you do have to do some like horizontal scrolling. So let's say I'm in my swim lane all the way. I've scrolled all the way to the right. It will reset my page and reset the screen. And it's just like, let's say I want to move two or three things from like in progress to complete. It just like that really grinds my gears. and I'm just like, why is it done this way? So obviously the way to fix this is maybe you do some kind of like optimistic rendering type thing where like you update the UI and then that like stores it in some like local storage type thing. And then at some point it like tries to hit the server to save your state. And then like, if it fails, it will like try to retry a certain amount of times. And if those retries fail, then at which point you notify the user with some banner that says like, hey, low internet connection or something, we couldn't save your state. But I just feel like it's 2019, it's almost 2020. I don't know why apps are reloading my page. I don't want to reload the page. Like, you know, Trello has it figured out. And obviously they're doing that. I believe they're doing that on web too, because like in the desktop or not web, on their desktop app, I think, or even their like web app, I don't think the page reloads when you drag a card from one swim lane to the next. So I'm just like, this is like the one thing that every now and then I'll scroll through the app store and be like, what are my other options for to-do apps? But I'll get off my long rant right now. But that's my first rant is page reloads. I hate them.
Fair enough. And I think that specific use case is one where it's really shitty. I also think there's a dark side of avoiding page reloads, like no matter what. Mm-hmm. And developers go through all this fuss and work to overly always never have a page reload when like sometimes it's fine. Like there's no problem. It's like this can just be a form and you can just hit submit. Like it's fine that it's not. But I think specifically in like the context of a to-do app, that type of interaction, you expect that kind of optimistic rendering and you don't expect the page to reload. I think that's a big piece of expectations. I think Notion specifically is interesting because to me, it's very clearly built in web technologies. There's nothing native about any of it. So if you're using the mobile app, it's just the website. If you're using the desktop app, it's just the website. And like, I very much commend them for leaning into web technologies so hard and doing so much. But I feel like they almost let you do too much in their app sometimes. Like to me, it would make sense to just not allow you to have a Kanban view on mobile because like, they can't do it well, but they let you do more, which is like what I love and hate about Notion is they let you push it really, really far, which is interesting. Cool. My gripe is this next, I have a lot of gripes here, but one of my gripes here that it like absolutely pisses me off so much is password reset emails taking 1,000 years.
Oh,
like
wow.
These emails taking like 10 minutes or 15 minutes to send. And so many times it's like, I'm trying to get into the conference call and I don't have the login and I'm late to get into it. And I click reset password to get that data I need. And like, I just don't get the email. It's like, where is it? It's not in spam. It's not in junk. And then like 20 minutes later, it shows up. It's like, well, thanks. Now I don't even care anymore. Like, I don't even need your thing. And like the takeaway here, it's so simple. Like if you're gonna background emails, think about what you prioritize in the queue. And a password reset should be very, very high on that list versus like marketing emails. And I remember one time, I forget what app it was, but I was like so pissed off because I was trying to get a password reset and I got a marketing email in the time I was trying to get a password reset. I was like, there was two background jobs and you fucking prioritized your marketing email. And that just absolutely drives me crazy. And like, on some apps, I think it even works to foreground these. Like if you don't have the volume, maybe you don't even have to put it in the background. Just like get it out to the user. And that same with like login codes for token SMSs. Sometimes it's just like, where is the login code? It can be so frustrating. There's a lot of friction in onboarding and sign-in. It's like anything you can do to reduce that friction, do it. Prioritize those background jobs for people trying to access your system for sure.
Interesting. Okay, so if we're talking about Rails land here and you're using a technology like Sidekick, you can have these things called like priority queues. So like every background job you have is like, you can basically say, I want this to be like critical, high, medium, low, or whatever. I forget what the defaults are.
Yeah.
So you're saying that like your hypothesis that potentially some of these apps have, or for in your specific case, like a marketing email was on a higher priority queue than,
yes,
than the password reset. That's so funny.
Or in the same queue, in the same queue, and it was just ahead of it. And so it was in the same queue. But like, come on, you got to prioritize these resets to be high or critical or login codes, because like there's already so much friction around that. So to me, it just drives me bonkers.
I wonder if that's a function of like not really having the foresight of like what priority you should be in. So everything's just on critical. So it's like everything is just like in the same queue or something like that. Wow, that's so interesting.
Well, I've done that before. And that's why like I've seen it on the, like I had users complaining about this on one of my apps and I realized like everything was just normal. There was nothing prioritized over anything else. And this is a couple of years ago, but I've been this person, that developer, not prioritizing those. It's like very easy to just configure, oh yeah, put something above in the queue. And it really does work that way, that it puts it at the front of the line if there's two things in the different queues. And I've seen other background job systems and like cron job systems, and they work very, very similar. There's usually some idea of queue and priority in background job systems, even outside of Rails land.
Yeah, that's so funny, because every time I get one of those password resets or every time I get like an SMS token, I'm just like literally tapping my finger on my desk. I'm like tapping my foot, like, where is this thing? Like, I need this thing to happen like now. But wow, that's, I'm like, honestly, I'm quite surprised that this didn't make my like gripe list. But that's, yeah, that's definitely a good one. Okay, so my second gripe is around resetting your filter settings around, like, if I don't have an account, I've noticed that this is true for web apps or apps in general that require you to like, that really require you to input really good filters to get what you're looking at. An example of this could be like, I'm looking for a new car. I'm looking for a new apartment. So I know two specific apps.
CarMax is a huge one.
Yeah.
I know that. They don't save your state.
Oh my God, it kills me. And CarGuru, I think, is another one. And also Apartments.com. And so I downloaded Apartments.com the other day just because I was in San Francisco. And I was like, you know, I'm just curious like what an apartment would cost me per month. And every time I would go in, I would set my filter and I'd be like, oh, I don't know, I'm looking for like a studio with one bath. And I want to see like what my options are if I wanted parking. So I would click the little button with the little car icon that says parking. And I would come back, you know, in my free time. And then I would like look again. I'd be like, oh my God, there's like so many more options now. And then I'd click on my filters and I'd be like, oh, all my filters reset. And I literally have nothing saved. And I was just like, I don't understand why these settings couldn't have been stored in local storage or if, I don't know, async storage on the phone or anything, just so that like
so
I can resume where I was at. So it's like, I in my head, I was like, I guarantee you if I signed up for an account, these settings would have been saved. So my gripe is
not
that, like,
always even though. So I feel like there's two layers of gripes here, because some apps like booking.com, for example, I use them a lot to like book hotel rooms and stuff. And even though I have an account, they don't save searches. Like if I'm searching for a hotel room and I haven't booked it, like next time I open the app, like, come on. This is table stakes, people.
Yeah. It's like, do you not want to retain me?
Right. It's crazy.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just like, save your settings. And, you know, treat guest users as you would regular users, and also treat your regular users like, you got to make this thing that they don't even think about it. The fact that this is even a conversation of like, how come my settings weren't saved is like, you know, you did something like that's potentially kind of mildly annoying for users.
For sure. I actually just checked Airbnb and they don't save your search even though you haven't booked. It's like, to me, it's so simple to do this, like especially if you're filtering through and looking for a list of items. It makes a ton of sense to save that state when you revisit the site. And like in a practical sense, you can use local storage to do this. I was actually working on an e-commerce project lately and we built this custom integration that lets you like star items. So there's a huge grid of products and you can kind of favorite or bookmark products. And, you know, there was a lot of debate on what to do if you're not signed in and you star a product, like what actually happens. And what we actually decided to do is save that, cache all that in local state. Then when you go and actually create an account, that local state syncs to your account. Like, this is the way you should do it. And I love doing that because it kind of ramps up what you're asking of the user. It's like, hey, interact with things, search with things, play with things. We'll provide value right away, even though you don't have an account. Then when you make your account, we'll kind of absorb that value and take that all in. I feel like one of the best people who do this really, really well is Stripe. Like you can just go and start playing with Stripe and it's like, hey, do you want to save all this stuff? If you want to save all this stuff, make an account. And I think that's really, really cool to like slowly ramp up what you ask of your users and provide as much value as you can up front. Couldn't agree more with that gripe. I think that's a good one. All right, my gripe here, not thinking about the size of the device. So like putting things I care about, especially in mobile apps, at the tippy top of the app. Like these phones are so freaking huge, I can't touch it with one hand. I can't reach it with my thumb. It's like, and it's in the furthest away corner is the hamburger menu from my thumb, like the thing that I need all the time. Like put it under my thumb. Like even if it's not the most aesthetic thing, like put it under my thumb and like figure out the reachability here. But I think the big takeaway is like, you need to be sure to test the apps in all the contexts, like huge and teeny tiny. I've made this mistake in two ways a bunch of times. Like I don't always test properly on iPhone 5Ss. So then I get a lot of bug reports and users like, hey, I'm on an iPhone 5 and like I can't see the navigation element on the side. And also like the other day I did a handoff for a web app to a client and they opened it up on like a 4K 36 inch monitor and it didn't look great. But it's just like, fuck man, I have to think about an iPhone 5S, like a 2.5 inch screen, all the way up to a 27 inch monitor. But that's our job, to think about all those different contexts that the platform will be used in. And we need to think about how things render and make sure to scale the app in the context of the size of the device. And I feel like a lot of kind of fledgling or new apps, they're just like, oh, just put it in a hamburger menu, put it at the top. But it's like, that makes no sense for this device, for that interaction to be buried all the way in the top corner where I can't use it with one hand. It's crazy to me.
Wow. Okay. Now that you mention it, that's really interesting because I can't think of the specific example, but I've seen websites where on mobile, the like hamburger menu will like float in the middle of the screen with you as you scroll. And I've always like wondered, like, why is that? Like, why would you ever do that from like an aesthetic purpose? But it's because like you can literally tap, because you know, sometimes your thumb more or less is somewhere in the middle of the screen. So if you have access to that menu, it just makes it like that much easier to access the rest of your site. Wow, that's a really interesting thing that I never would have thought about.
Yeah, and it's one reason I bias toward tab navigation on mobile. And I feel like a lot of really well-designed apps do that, like the main four or five things right there at the bottom of the screen. And I've noticed like there's a newer app from Google, the Google Tasks app, which is not very good. It's not the one you're hunting for.
I was about to ask.
They actually have a hamburger menu at the bottom of the screen. From a design standpoint, I love a lot of what they're doing. And I feel like it's very bold and yet immediately approachable and very fresh. I think it's a really nice design. And so, hey, there's one that's a pro. I think the Google Tasks app is a really interesting take on a to-do app. And it's all built in the newest framework. I forgot what it's called off the top of my head. The new Google thing. I'll Google it. I don't remember. All right. What's your next gripe, JP?
Okay. So this gripe really cuts me deep. And it just bothers me just even thinking about it. And this gripe is, sometimes on web apps, most of the web apps that we use for work, they have web apps will have like a marketing site similar to like how WizTutor has a marketing site, and then you like log in and then all of a sudden you're on a dashboard. But when I click the login button on the marketing page, it will open up a new tab, which I'm either already authenticated in or will ask me to authenticate. So the flow is land on marketing page, hit the login button, open up a new tab. The new tab is an authenticated app. And so this happens in a couple apps that I could think of. Lever is an app that we use to manage all of the candidates that are coming through our pipeline that are potential hires. Also, there's another app called Iterable. Iterable is basically a tool for transactional messages that lets marketing people and non-technical people send and edit like text messages, emails, push notifications, things like that through some like if this then that logic. But it really just bugs the shit out of me that another tab is open and that I have to see the marketing page. Like, and it bothers me even more when I'm already signed in. So I'll hit login and I'm like authenticated already. It's like, why are you showing me the marketing page and not just like whatever the dashboard is for what opens up in the new tab? And I'm kind of like a neat freak when it comes to my tabs. I'm very the opposite of my coworker who was on this podcast in our last episode. This guy has like a tab manager, and he at any time he has like 150 tabs open, and he loves it. Like every time I pair program with him, I'm just like, dude, can we please open up a new window? Because I can't even look at how many tabs you have open.
I can't even do that in my editor. Like, people keep a bunch of code mm-hmm. tabs open in their editor. I can't do that either. But to go back to your gripe, this idea of like opening the app in a new tab. Okay, so it stems from a really good practice. I think it's a really good practice, which is, and I'm going to start picking this up more and more for projects I'm working on, but it's splitting apart the marketing site from the actual app site, which I think is really useful for a ton of reasons. Because even if you pick up, you know, Squarespace or Webflow or something like that for the kind of marketing side of apps, that allows the marketing team to really continuously make refinements and tweak that, test landing pages, test pricing grids, whatever they want to do. And then on the app side, like, they don't have to open up a GitHub issue every time they want to just update marketing copy. So I think that it makes a lot of sense to have two things to do that really well. But then, like, literally, it's just a target equals blank on that login button that opens it in a new tab. And I can't fathom the reason why you would want to do that. I mean, the other side of the spectrum is Notion and Asana both do this, and I find it actually really annoying. You cannot get to the marketing pages
right.
if you're signed in. So it's like, I don't know where the give and take is here, but like, I think the easiest option here is like, why open in a new tab? And I think it's the marketing people's incentives aren't in alignment with the app side incentives. Like, they want to keep you on that marketing site because they're just looking at their Google Analytics and they want your page session to be as long as possible. But it's like, this isn't even serving your user. And I think especially, again, when it comes to authentication, sign in and sign out, it's already a point of friction for users. Username and passwords are bullshit. Everyone hates it. So like, make it as easy as possible. Don't open up a new tab. Like, that's just rude. You know what else does this is Airbnb does this. Whenever you do a search, every single listing you click on opens a fucking new tab. It drives me absolutely bonkers. And it's like, why would you do that? This is rude. It's rude.
The reason that happens, I bet, is because someone in product was like, well, when I'm searching listings, I'm opening up a bunch of new tabs so that I can compare across. And it was like, I guarantee that decision was made because like one person in the company was like, this is how I do it. And then they were like, let's just do it that way. Or maybe not. I don't want to talk shit.
I think that totally could be it, but I think it makes the product more sticky. Like I was just saying, like, they're looking at the analytics sessions and they want as many open sessions as they want. And like, imagine you're at work on your lunch break, you're searching for an Airbnb, you end up with 8 open tabs. It's way more likely you leave one of those open from when you get home.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think that's what it comes down to, but it's user hostile. It's shitty. It's bad design. Okay. This one really drives me bonkers. The Facebook app. Is this absolute, they have so many dark patterns in Facebook, it's not even funny. But this one is like one of the worst. If you log out of the Facebook app, it does not log you out. It keeps you signed in, but it like closes the session. So you have to put in your password to re-enter the session. But okay, what's so shitty about this is like so many things. First of all, like, I clicked the button log out as a user. My expectation is that my local session is cleared and that like, that is out of that system. But what's insane is like, it's actually a setting in your profile, in the app settings, which is like, when I log out, request password on login. And so it's like, there's this idea that you can have multiple accounts logged into the Facebook app at once and then like touch your profile photo to like log in. And it can or can't require a password. But they just hijacked the word log out for this multiple account management. And the reason they do it is because when you log out of the Facebook app, they're still getting your device's location data and other data. And when you use the app as other accounts, then it also is sharing that data between the accounts. So like, it's a data play, it's user hostile. And it's like, they took this word log out and they did their own thing that just isn't real. And I feel like it's just one of these things of like prioritizing business needs over product simplicity and privacy. And I think it's really user hostile. I think it's shitty.
Wow, I never thought about that. I was like, why isn't this logging me? I mean, I didn't care that much, but now that you bring it up, like, yeah, they're like definitely collecting data on me and all this stuff. And in a world where like people hate Facebook already because of privacy, like they're not really doing themselves a favor by having this like weird pattern where you have to opt out of this feature.
Yeah, and it's an opt out, which I think is really shitty. There's so many dark patterns in Facebook that I go on and on about. I think one of the things that I really hate is when people hijack words that have actual meanings. Like, okay, cell phone plans, unlimited plans. Like, mm-hmm. that word has no meaning anymore. Like, yeah. unlimited plans just aren't unlimited. But I think another one for me is like Apple Messages. An Apple message, quote unquote, is a different thing than an SMS message. Like, they hijacked the English word message into their own product. I think that's a shitty move. I think that's a really dark pattern.
Yeah. Okay. So I have a list of gripes about Slack. Now, don't get me wrong. I think that Slack does a lot of cool things. Like, you know what? We'll get to the cool stuff later because, you know, you always want the bad news first. So these are my Slack gripes. I absolutely hate that Slack turns apostrophes into the curly apostrophes because when
what does that even mean? Into curly apostrophes.
Okay, let me see.
This to me is the smallest nitpick.
Let me see if I can pull up an example. And the reason that I hate that is because when I copy and paste a chunk of code, like a string, it is no longer valid. So there have been times where I try to
fair enough.
I try to copy like some curl request or something like that. I paste it into my terminal, and all of a sudden. It just doesn't work. And I'm like, why is this not working? And then I look at it and it's because it turns them into like the curly
single
apostrophe.
Quotes instead of apostrophes.
No. Let me see if I can.
I don't know what a curly apostrophe is, but that makes a lot of sense. And I think it probably has to do with the way that they're escaping strings, possibly. I wonder if you put them in as code, though, I would imagine that it preserves the original text.
I think it does. Yes.
Yeah, it would. But that's still annoying. Like, you're changing the intent of what you wrote and changing the format. That's really shitty.
Okay, yes. So there is like, I looked this up and there's like straight and curly quotes. And the straight quotes are what you want for code. And the curly quotes are like, they look cooler because it's more akin to like what you might see like in a book. Let's see if I could like actually paste one of these guys in. So here's an example of a curly quote. And then here, I mean, it's hard to tell, but based on the different fonts, because sometimes fonts don't like display things properly, but.
I see this now. Yeah, that's really interesting. And they're different character codes. This is not a problem that I was aware of, that actively aware of. But I think now that you mentioned, I think this has bit me in the ass once or twice when people have like tried to Slack me a specific command or that's interesting. Yeah, it turns into these like fancy quotes. Like, it really is just the exact same thing. I think it's the difference between straight and opening and closing quotes. That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if they're actively doing that or if that's something like at the OS level that's happening in. I wonder why that's happening.
I don't know. And the reason it's even funnier too is because the font that Slack uses doesn't even really like make it that apparent. So I can understand like why you might want like a curly quote. Like, let's say you're making a landing page that's very
sure.
like
you want the angled quotes, the
yeah
opening
yeah
and closing angled quotes.
You want it to like actually look like a quote that you like were taught to draw when you were like in elementary school and not just like two straight lines down. But it just seems weird to me that they are like actively doing this. Like, some poor developer was given instructions that said, hey, every time you see these straight curly quotes,
it seems like so much work for such little benefit. I don't understand.
I don't get it.
I'm with you on this gripe. It seems user hostile and like changing what users are writing for like no reason beyond someone's preference for curly and straight quotes. One of my gripes in Slack is when you start a draft, it like jumps to the top in this draft section.
Oh my God.
And then like, I'm like, I know where that thread is. Where the hell is it? And like, it's at the top. So I feel like the solution is, I don't know, but it's really annoying because I just constantly lose tracks of drafts. I think the other thing is like, which we'll talk about more about this in a second, but the idea of the user management, like the account management strategy, feels very bonkers to me. I like that they're very separate, like they're these separate workspaces. But every time you get a new device, to have to know every single workspace URL and the email that was set up in, it's just really bonkers. Like, to like have to know all those URLs and emails for those 8 workspaces, like there has to be a way to wrangle that into a single like account if you want to optionally. So you can one login, get to all your workspaces. I don't understand why they've chosen this strategy. I will say there's some upsides. Look, let's just jump into it. I have this gripe overall. I think a lot of apps don't think enough about multiple accounts and team management and the strategy of like workspaces and how this works. Like, Stripe does this really, really well. I can have one email address associated with 20 accounts, and there's an account switcher that's sane and it makes sense, and you can share access very easily to your Stripe dashboard. An example that does this horribly is Bank of America. Like, I tried to add my assistant into my Bank of America login, and like, we just ended up sharing passwords because it was literally impossible. And like, I have a work login that's for my agency, and I have a personal login that's for my personal finances. And on the Bank of America app, I literally have to delete the app to use two different logins.
Oh, gosh.
And their mobile site doesn't really support anything. So like, they just didn't think about this use case where somebody needs to log into these different apps. And like, another one, I've been using Pastel lately, which is a really cool, probably be a pick in the future, really cool way to like share feedback on an app. But you can only belong to one team. You can't like belong to multiple teams. So like, a separate agency that I work with sometimes and collaborate with added me to their team, and like, oh, that's it. You can't be in a different team. Like, you're just screwed.
Oh,
so I think
what?
The takeaway here is like thinking about account strategies. Have you noticed this, JP, that like some apps do it really well and some apps do it really shitty?
Okay. One app that I think is kind of in the middle because they realized it early on is Twilio. So Twilio, for those of you that don't know, is basically like the one-stop shop for like all things SMS and voice and text. And I think they even do like a WebRTC thing.
Yeah, they do.
But anyways, I think early on, Twilio realized that people were creating multiple accounts to get like a dev environment and like a prod environment. Mm-hmm. Because like, you have like the idea of like sandboxing, but like once an app is like in production, there's no way to like test against it. Like, it's just in prod. And so what people would do, and what I've done in the past, is like, I would just create another account. I would do like the plus trick for emails. So it would be like the same email, like everything would go to the same email account, but it would be like a different email account. It would be like jpco.plusdev or something like that.
Yeah.
But then I realized that later on they made it so that you can like actually merge accounts. But even then, I feel like account management for Twilio is like a weird, like still in like a weird state, because like I don't know what all, I can't easily find in one place like, here is like the main account and here are all the emails associated
to
that account.
Sub-accounts, or whether they're different accounts. Like, yeah, I agree with you. Like, they've thought about it a little bit. But I think the takeaway here, though, is when you're building an app and structuring an app, think about the kinds of data that need to be shared between multiple users. And like, I feel like it's very easy to be like, oh, a user has many drafts. And like, that's it. The drafts are tied to the user model. But it's like, well, what if someone else wants to edit a draft? Does it make sense for it to be tied to the user model? Probably not. That's a weird relationship. And so think about ways that you can like kind of scope the data to like, maybe there's an account model. An account has many users. Maybe there's a company and or a workspace has many users. I think Notion does this well. To some degree, Slack kind of gets this right, which is the idea that I have a workspace that I'm a member of and I can add multiple people in. Like, if you go up and create a Notion account, like, you automatically have your own personal workspace. And then you can just start adding people into it from there. I think that makes a ton of sense. Like, for a quick example, we actually did an app with the agency for dog trainers, which is really interesting. But so initially it was every trainer has many clients, but then like very quickly the use case of, well, I'm a trainer that has multiple trainers like in my dog training company. How do we access all the clients? So then we scoped it to a school. So a trainer belongs to a school and a school has many trainers. And then the school has many clients and that's shared between all of the trainers. And so you have to think about how to, where the data relationships bring. But the reason I bring up that specific refactor is because it was really a pain in the ass to decouple the clients from the trainers and like rescope them to the school model. So that's something to think about early on, is when you need people to access multiple data, like tying it to your user model is a very weak and very like a highly coupled paradigm to work out of. It's really nice to come up with another abstract that lets you kind of associate data outside of the context of a user, for sure.
Yeah, it's kind of like, what's the noun here? Like, it's basically like how we've talked about in the past, like, hey, don't put everything in your user model and have like a really fat user model and a really fat user controller, where your user controller has like some random callback that like does like a chain of different things, where you could have, where actually your user model and controller should be like eight different models and eight different controllers, all that just have like very basic CRUD actions against them.
For sure, for sure.
I don't really have much to say about like Slack, other than like, yeah, they have some cool things that like make you like a cool power user. For example, you can like command plus K to search, but like, that's like basically it. But I will say that I think that it's really nice when apps have like cool user power user features.
For sure. They like reward people who like are heavy users of the app, for sure.
Yeah, like sometimes you can navigate in apps with like HJKL, or like sometimes you can navigate just by like hitting the down arrows. And this might just be like a conversation of like really good accessibility.
That's true. Cause I love apps, especially web apps that have good tab support. It's like, mm-hmm. I can tab around, right. And like, yeah, that's so nice. Or even like GitHub, the URL scheme. Like, I know exactly where I need to go just by like fucking with the URLs at the top. And like, they know that they're catering to devs, but that's very much rewarding people like in the know, like all the little URL tricks for GitHub, which there's a ton.
Yeah, that's so funny, because like, I'll know exactly I need to go to this user, I need to go to this workspace / pools, or like this space / issues.
That's how
and, like,
I use GitHub.
I go exactly straight there. And I don't even think
I even add intended. Query params, like issues close. Like, I add query params in the URLs even.
Cool. All right. So tell me what you have to say about emails.
Oh my God. So like, these deranged email collection pop-ups drive me absolutely insane. So like, you know, you're on a website, you click on a story and it's like, would you like to be rich and beautiful? Yes, I'm awesome. No thanks, I'll stay poor and ugly. Like, it's just like such a dark pattern, especially the ones that you can't close, you can't ignore. I mean, everybody universally hates these things. And nearly, I would say 80% of my clients at some point ask for these in their landing page or website. It happens constantly. And it's something that I have to like really, really push back on for like so many reasons. Like, they're user hostile, users hate them. They don't convert all that well. The research shows that they're not significantly better than a well-designed interstitial email collection. And then on top of that, Google kills your SEO lately if you do these things. So I just feel like they're a bad pattern. Stay away from these things. And I think even more insidious is lately, apps are starting to do these types of like basically pop-up ads. Like Spotify, I opened it the other day and it was like popped up for a new album that was out. It was just like, fuck you. Like, I listened to that like 8 years ago. I don't care about the new album. Or like Netflix does this with new shows. But I think one of the worst ones is, I was using iOS the other day. And I'm like, just like doing something in Slack for work. And literally iOS had a pop-up that said, have you tried the new maps?
Oh, gosh.
And I was just like, this is not appropriate. Like, this is not appropriate. This is, go away.
That's so interesting. And I'm just trying to think of like why this happens. And maybe I'm being a judgmental prick of like of how tech works. But to me, it just seems like these decisions are made because some metrics are trying to be driven, right? So it's like, hey, we need more engagement on Apple Maps because we just spent a bunch of time developing all these new features and we want to take away the brain space that people have with like always just going to Google Maps. Like, oh, hey, how do you get there? Oh, I'll just open up Google Maps. And we spent all this time investing in dev resources for Apple Maps. How do we get more people to like be aware of it? Like, I feel like all these things, like this is like an awareness issue, right? And so some product manager out there, some manager or some engineer was like, you know what we should do? We should have a pop-up ad that tells them exactly that they should go use it. And the way that we can measure success is like how many people click on that. And then let's see if that will drive up the number of people that are using Apple Maps, right? Because yeah. I'm sure they have some sort of analytics dashboard that says like, this is how many iPhone users we have, and this is how many iPhone users are actually using like Apple Maps, and this is how many iPhone users deleted the app from their phone. Let's see if we can make these numbers better. And oh my God, it just drives me insane because I truly feel that as an engineer, you should be building a feature that a user will be excited about. Like, I don't think I've ever once said, you know what I'm really excited about? Oh my God, I got this new ad that like told me that I should try this new feature in the app.
I think interruption is a bad strategy. Like, it's a lazy design decision to interrupt your users. They're not looking for that thing. They don't want the thing. There's no context for the thing. And you just straight up interrupt them. That's crazy to me. That just makes no sense. And like, that's what they Mad Men did in the 50s. Like, that's TV ads. That's not 2020. That's not what we do here. And I feel like there is other solutions, like featuring things in context, like the new album. It's like, highlight it. That's awesome. I would love to see the new album highlighted in context of albums. Like, we can be smarter about the way we talk to users, request emails, those types of things. Like, we can be way, way, way more smart, way smarter about how we do this in a way that actually provides value. I feel like, you know, there's even like paywalls for like the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal. Like, there's some of these guys who do it really, really bad. Like, I think it's I don't remember who it was. I think it's Wall Street Journal. Like, you can't read any articles, no matter what. It's just like with this giant pop-up, you can't ever get through or read anything. But I feel like the New York Times does hit a middle ground of like showing you how many articles you have left. And it's pretty quiet. It's at the bottom of the page. It's like, you can read 3 or 4 for free. Like, we'll give you some grace there. We let you check it out. And like, at some point, build trust over time. And then the interstitial pops up. It's like, hey, it's now a hard paywall. And I think this idea of like ramping up to your users, avoiding interruption, and like asking more and more permission from them instead of just like assuming you can do something like that. So I don't know. That's my 2 cents there.
Yeah, it's tough because you definitely, I get why it happens, right? But I agree with you that the interruption part is like bad. I think you should introduce new features in the right context. So I think that requires like a really deep understanding of like your funnel and like how users interact with your app and like where they are in their journey. So I definitely think that it's a matter of like picking your spots. So if you're like, oh, you know, users are at the top of our funnel here, maybe we can like introduce some kind of messaging or highlight some new feature at the top of the app, right? That says like, oh, hey, here, if you're in Spotify, for example, hey, check out this album. Like, it has to be like very unobtrusive and almost like it feels like just part of the app.
Yeah. Or like, you like leverage the existing notification system. So someone who does this really well is Robinhood. And in general, they're a stock investing app. And if you want examples of like very thoughtful, efficient design, check out Robinhood. In my mind, they probably win best design overall, like in the category. They get the prize from me. But like, they have this convention of like in-app notifications for like, you know, stock changes or app updates. Like, they just use all the same notification stack for any shit you need to know. And like, they will change them colors, they'll make them bold, but it's like, you know where the updates are going to be. And like, there's a thoughtful reason of why that update's happening where it's at. What about you, JP? Have the courage to give one app or platform the best design award in your mind?
Oh my God. I'm trying to think of like, what is like the one app that I really truly just like don't really have many gripes over? Yeah. And I don't know if, okay, so my answer is Reddit, the Reddit app. And I don't know if I don't know if it's just because I've used it long enough to like figure everything out. So I'm talking both about, I think their web experience is really good. And I also think their mobile.
Are you talking about the newest version? Because it's pretty controversial.
I don't know. The version I have on my phone is just like, and I don't think are you talking about the newest version of the web or their mobile app?
The web. But so if you like the mobile, then you probably like the newest version of the web as well, which has only been like 6 months, I think. It's been like 6 months. It's not super, super new.
Oh, right. Okay, so I'm not sure. I actually mostly use Reddit on my phone in passing. And I'm using like the official Reddit app and not like one of the like hundreds of thousands
Needle,
of, not hundreds of, like,
Redder,
yeah.
Star, yeah.
Yeah, one of the dozens of like just random third party apps. I'm just talking about the regular Reddit app. And for some reason, it's like organized chaos. Like, Reddit has this like, they're delivering you content that's like tailored to your needs, right? So you subscribe to different subreddits and somehow they figured out this like way to have like organized chaos. So like, I have my feed, I have like, I can easily go to all of my subreddits. They do have like a bottom navigation thing at the bottom, so it makes it easy to like go through like whether or not you're looking at your subreddits or whether or not you're looking at your like actual feed. And then it's like not really that hard to find like your saved posts, this and that. I mean, I'm not like a power Reddit user, but like for my needs, I just feel like everything behaves the way that I expect it to behave. And I think that's the biggest thing I look for in apps is, so I'm not a kind
there's
of
nothing
I'm not,
to learn
exactly, right? So it's like, oh, if I have this user gesture, I expect it to do this, and it just like most of the time it just does that. I wish I had like an app that I'm like, oh my God, this app is like perfect, it's beautiful. But I but I think the apps that work really well are the apps that you don't even think about, because
that's
like
true.
You have nothing to complain about. It's so I feel like I'm more of a complainer than a praiser for this conversation, but like
fair enough.
I think Reddit is like good for me.
Awesome. I think it'd be interesting to do for future conversations to like dive into specific feature sets and talk about like how we would implement them. So it's like, here's a feature that we really love. How would we go about implementing something like this? That could be an interesting exploration in the future. But I feel like out of our shit list, we had like 2 on our hit list of things we actually loved. But hopefully the conversation served everyone well. And that was super fun to go through. Do you have any picks for us this week, JP?
Okay, so the pick I have for this week is something that I don't actually own yet, but...
Okay.
I'm going to New York in December with a couple friends, and I was looking into suitcases, and my roommate was like, hey, you should check out Away suitcases. And I was like, oh, that's really funny, because I'm pretty sure even before you mentioned that, I've seen tons and tons and tons of ads.
So many Away Instagram ads for
on,
these
yeah,
guys.
Yeah, on Instagram. So, I mean, maybe they're doing something right. But I started watching some YouTube videos on them like last night. And I got to say, I don't know. They look really cool. And two, they just look really... And I think they're also like really space efficient. So I think that packing things is like really... You can pack things really efficiently. But I'm all about the aesthetic and the function. So form and function... Yeah. I don't know. I'm really into like backpacks and bags and like things like this. And so when I saw this, I was like, you know, this like is really cool. And I kind of want to give it a shot. In fact, I'm probably going to impulse buy it like later today.
Nice. Well, you got to follow up with a pick in the future after your New York trip, if it worked well for you, if you like it or not. I will say their stuff looks really, really nice. I wonder about the quality, even though it like looks very aesthetic and like looks well designed. I wonder about the quality, because that's hard to hit that in bags. And I'm kind of a bag nerd like you. Like, I'm on Carryology catching up with what the best bags are. Cool. My pick for this week is Blinkist, which is funny because it's actually an Instagram ad that got me. And I think it's like the only Instagram ad that's ever gotten me. But it's an app that does book summaries. So they're 15-minute summaries of books. And so here's where I'll start. Like, I love reading lots of books, and I read lots of books. But I think there's also usefulness in just like kind of getting the content of a book as quick as possible, kind of exploring it. If you like it, a refresher on a book is another way to do that. And so for me, I've always used Audible for that. So it's like, it's different than reading, but I still get a lot of the content and I'm able to power through it really quickly while doing other things. And so Audible was really my go-to for that. But I also don't love audiobooks. Like, for someone, I really read a lot better than I listen to things, and I just have a better retention. Like, you can copy paste, you can reference it, all those other benefits. But this app is like definitely the best of both worlds. And they have hundreds of like self-help and fiction and nonfiction and business books. And like, it's allowed me to very much like tear through my insane 200 book list backlog. And I'm like powering through it really quickly and seeing if I want to explore books further. And like, it's giving me the nut and the gist of the book. And so like, it breaks books into what they call blinks, which is like all the key concepts. They break into these like single page, really easy to read, like 3 or 4 minute concepts. And it makes it really easy to like flag and bookmark kind of the concepts you want to explore more, which is really, really interesting. But they also have an audio version. So they not only do like a written book summary, but someone reads it to you as well. I don't use the audio component at all, but I'm really loving having this very curated, organized, really well-written book summaries. And so for me, what I'm going to do is like, I'm going to do Audible for 3 months, cancel, do this for 3 months, cancel, do Audible. Like, it's just a new thing that's like in my cycle to get through, especially because like a client will like recommend a book like, oh, you should really read this book for working on my project. And it's like, I don't really need to read the whole thing, but yeah, I do need to like understand its concepts and skim it. It's like, this is a really good way to pick that up. I've been really loving it.
That's so funny. I definitely have seen ads that are like, did you know that on average, a CEO reads 40 books a year? And I'm like, man, that's crazy. But cool. It's good to know that there's actually some value to these like crazy ads that you see all the... So yeah, I mean, we're both just suckers, because I've definitely have seen ads for Blinkist and Away. But, you know, turns out some of these products are actually not terrible. You know, sometimes like, it's not the worst.
Yeah, and hopefully it's obvious that this is in no way sponsored. I wish it was. I would take money to talk about them.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thanks so much, everyone, for listening. And you can visit iterationpodcast.com to learn more about the show. Find links to Twitter for JP and I. We'd love to hear from you guys. Let us know if you have any questions or comments. And thanks so much for listening. We'll see you next time.
See ya.